Good evening, everybody. Anybody like to sponsor a class? 718-375-1023. I don't know how it works, by the way. Otherwise, I would tell you. You have to speak to Rico. I'll tell you how it works. I have no idea. Rabbi Hanach Leibowitz calls jealousy kin'ah Satan's most powerful weapon. So I think most powerful weapon. There's a midrash in Bereshit Rabbah. It says when Abraham and Yitzchak were traveling to Har HaMoriah, one to slaughter and one to be slaughtered, in order to perform the command of Hashem, Satan tried many arguments to convince Abraham to turn back from his holy mission. When he failed with Abraham, he turned to Yitzchak. And the 37-year-old young man resisted all of his tricks. And then he figured he'd pull out his most powerful weapon. What do you think he told him? Im ken, kol otan hapargiyot she'asat imach imecha l'Yishmael, san ed beta yiruta. I should put the pause after imecha, really. Kol otan hapargiyot she'asat imecha, Yishmael san ed beta yiruta. After you die, he told Yitzchak, if you go on this Akedah trip and you don't overcome your elderly father and escape, all the beautiful things your mother has given you will go to Yishmael as inheritance. The Satan, who knows human nature better than anyone, speaking to the unselfish, the kind, the tzaddik, Yitzchak, felt this would be the way to get him to rebel. And even Yitzchak Avinu, the crown of Givurah in Jewish history, says the Midrash, and we don't understand what it means exactly, but in our terms at least we can understand that he had a pang of jealousy. And it weakened him, even if only for a moment. And even though he overcame and continued with his father to that altar upon which he was bound, from that little midrash we can somewhat understand the potency of this trait, which is latent in every human being. Rav Kook, alav shalom, said jealousy weakens positive thought. It darkens our vision. It attacks in so many different forms except as its true self. It always attacks in a different disguise. People eventually envy Hashem for his uniquely satisfied, unlimited state. It leads to kifira, heresy. Shevet Musar simplifies that very complicated sounding statement by Rav Kook. And he says in chapter 37, אם הוא מקנה ביופי של אדם וגבורתו בראשו אינו חפץ במה שגזר עליו הקדוש ברוך הוא. If a person is jealous of what another has, someone's good looks or strength or one of the top contenders for jealousy, someone else's wealth, that person doesn't want corollary to it what Hashem has decided they should have. Hamkaneh chomes nasho k'hu mit'abel tamid sechlo mit'chaseh merov kin'ah timuna bo. The one who is jealous is robbing his soul because he's constantly in mourning and his mind is lacking from all the jealousy and envy that is buried in it. The person is not free. His mind is not free. His heart is not free to pray and to learn and to do good deeds. Now, this is not meant to attack any gender, but I have to read it because some people think when you read Musar, it applies to people, maybe that doesn't apply to us anymore, or maybe it's different people, or maybe there were so many good people who are not subject to what we are subject to. But this was written by Chacham Abraham Antebi, Zecha Tzadik Levracha, who lived in Halab, Aleppo, about 200 years ago. In his Sefer Chochmah Musar, Perek Sadikim, Perek Bet, he writes, he's talking about Gezel, robbery. Ikar HaSibam V'Yalei Gezel, the main cause for bringing a person to robbery, actually more than robbery is when you're sneaking, right? But somebody, some gangster, kid, it was more taken by force. Hakomen ha-nashim comes from women. Kemo she'anu ro'im be'enenu hayom hazeh, like we see now, meaning 200 years ago in Halab. Da'afir mi she'enu ashir, even a person who is not rich, motzi al ishto be'malbushim na'im, he has to expend a lot of money for beautiful clothing for his wife. Ubetachshitim na'im, yotem k'dei yecholto, and in beautiful jewelry, more than he can afford. Ba'al korcho dohek et atzmo, and really against his will, he pressures himself. Umevila kol chepsa she'eshala, and he brings her all her desires that she asks for. Yan shekol isha ena tzara b'chaberta, since every woman's eye is jealous of her friend, v'hi mitkanet mimena, and she becomes envious of her. Uchshiroa shechaberta loveshet begadim chamudim, and when she sees her friend wearing beautiful clothing or special clothing, azover ala ruach kina, the winds of jealousy and envy overcome her. She wants to dress like her, so she fights with her husband. And she screams at him, Laila v'yom, night and day. Until he brings home what she requests. Even if she knows that her husband doesn't have the same financial ability as his friend. In koze dohato, with all of that she pressures him. And this is I can't picture Halab like this. But listen to this one. If this don't sound like Ocean Parkway. U'bifrat b'dor hazeh, he says, especially in this generation, shebechol shana v'shana, every year, yotzot hanashim b'inyan chadash rabushehem, the women come up with something new in their fashion as what to wear. U'poslim et habigadim arishonim, and they invalidate and nullify the value of the clothes that they have. Till Shana Shavra, from last year. Tolchim le'ibud, and they're thrown out. At least now we've improved, we give them to be kocholim. Ve'rotim nechadesh mabushim chadashim. Ta'aniya rotze gam ken la'asot ka'ashira. She wants to wear new clothing, and the poor woman wants to do as the rich. As was once said on Broadway, etc., etc., etc. We can't read the whole sefer. Pays to get, by the way. Haman Kirby was a man of great wisdom, and there are stories that Tuvia Ruach HaKodesh, even though he's from the later generations. That's Chokhmah Musar. So what is this thing called envy? So there's some thoughts on envy collected in different places. And so I started to play with all my books. Quote from Rashid Chokhmah. An envious person always considers what he has as too little, and what others have as very much. He wishes that others have less than they presently do. You notice how the Rashid Chokhmah, that classic of Musar, puts it. He doesn't wish that he will have more. It's a poison that makes you wish that the other person had less. Mishdam Eliyahu, hundreds of years later. Envy comes from focusing on the few moments of good fortune in the life of another person while ignoring his years of misfortune. You know, the grass is always greener. What Rabbi Dessler, Alav HaShalom, is referring to is if you see someone driving down the street in a bright, new, shiny automobile, or wearing a particular timepiece, which is a big status thing today, that you would like to have. And you focus on that, you think that other person's life is perfect because they have that thing that you want. But the rest of the picture is missing. And the envy causes a person to narrowly, with blinder, focus on the good thing that they see in the other person's life while ignoring what else may lie behind it, which could be a lot of sarot and a lot of sorrow. Rav Wolba, and his classic, Ale Shur, it's not sure, it's sure. Based on the Pasuk in Vayechi, referring to Yosef. The essence of envy is a deep desire to be someone else. In its extreme form, it is complete nullification of oneself. Again, the grass is greener. If I could only be X, you know how lucky I'd be? I wouldn't be me anymore. Is there a bigger indication of dissatisfaction than that? People become jealous of people who reach fame or fortune. And they become especially jealous when they feel that person doesn't deserve it. Not as smart as I am, not as good looking as I am, not as talented as I am. How come they like? It's cause for jealousy. It's not healthy thinking. Even though we know these facts, it pays to drive them home. Because we live in the U.S. of A. I sometimes think the U.S. of A means the United States of advertising. Because it's great, isn't it? Even if you never heard of it, never thought of it. Even if you don't listen to anything. You have no connection to media, music, CDs and tape land. Wouldn't you want an iPod anyhow after you see the ad? Really? Exciting. 10,000 tunes in your hand. I tried to figure out how long, it would have been a nice calculation if I had the time to figure out how long it would be if you, how much 10,000 tunes is in minutes of your life. I know how many Raymond Beta classes it is. Not 10,000. But that's a lot of tunes. I've been around a lot longer than most of you bright, shiny faces here tonight. I know a lot of music, but I could play Name That Tune forever. I ain't going to name 10,000. But you could have it in the palm of your hand. Don't you want it with a little white button ears so everybody knows you have one? U.S. of advertising. Even your toothpaste is no good anymore because there's a new improved version. It was Chochmah Musa, that same fabulous sefer, that said, you would not desire many things if you had not seen them by others. Envy causes you to desire more things than you naturally would. You could get along fine. You'd probably be much more satisfied were it not for the gift of God called eyes. If something did not exist, that's a real chiddush. If something did not exist, you would not feel bad if you didn't have it. Do you get that? We feel bad when we're missing something, but we wouldn't know we were missing it if somebody else didn't have it. Did you ever try and list the things you feel you're missing? How many of them are needs and how many of them are jealousies? A good way to figure it out, you know, Hashem is Maspiya Lechol Chai Ratzon. He provides for everybody Kilo Ram Hasto. If you sat down and made a list of the things you'd really, really like to have, there's a great way to test me against envy. How many things on your list would have been missed by people living 200 years ago? iPod would not be on, I guarantee you. Neither would Rolex. Especially with the diamond bezel and the purple face. So maybe it's not so bad anyhow. Could be, right? The fact that it says, Lo tachmol, lo tatsuruach aleinechem. Yeah. That's the other stuff. But yeah, just regular, like, I like a dress, I like a watch, I like a car, I like a shoes. It's not only that it's a bad midah. It's not merely that it's a bad trait. The Rosh, famous father of the Tur, has a sefer called Ochot Chaim, and in it he says, Kin'ah can be considered a serious illness. You know, anger, which would be another good class. We could do Midorah every week. I'd give you another one. If you like that, we can make it a theme. No, I'm not missing anybody. I certainly do not have a program of what we're going to speak about next week. Trust me. That's like Olam Abba. So far away. But envy also can be a physically debilitating emotion. People can have harmful physiological reactions to envy. And this is not a new scientific fact. The Reshit Chokhmah, Sefer Musa Rishon, writes that an envious person always feels sad and always feels miserable. That person is not able to study Torah, cannot pray with Kavanah, because the mind is constantly preoccupied with what's going on somewhere else. He's not able to enjoy the food that he eats. And is constantly worried about how to acquire what one doesn't have, and then when he gets it, he needs something else. And the person that you are envious of, says the Reshit Chokhmah, is going about their business, his or hers, enjoying life. Pops into my head now a story about a man who was at one time successful in his retail business. And he started to drop and couldn't figure out why. Good buyer. Neighborhood didn't change much. He put in the hours, certainly. So he called his rabbi and he said, Rabbi, I have to see you. Can you please come to my store? Why do I have to come to your store? Well, it's about my store, so I prefer if you're here, maybe you'll understand better. And he took the rabbi for a tour of his store, which was a retail store. And he told him, Rabbi, my problem is this. I don't know if I have a Din Torah or not, but since that man opened across the street, my business has been dropping. So the rabbi said, well, yes, I see that store across the street, but maybe it's because his lighting is better than yours. You know, people like a bright atmosphere when they shop. It puts them in a good mood. Sharp rabbi. And he said, no, can't be. I checked. I have 36 4-bulb fluorescent fixtures with bright white light. He has the same. says, well, maybe he has more racks than you do, more selection, more variety. No, Rabbi, I checked. I have the same amount of round racks, square racks, dap, he does, exactly. So maybe the placement of his window, or no, we use the same window trimmer. And anything the rabbi asks, same, exactly, same. There's no way, Rabbi, my business should not drop. And the rabbi said, maybe if you watch your own business more, not his business, you'll do better. The person who loses from envy is the envious one, while the other goes about their business. The one who loves money will not be satisfied with money. That's because the love of money is the symptom, not the root of the problem. People don't seek great wealth because they need it to live. They seek wealth because of material desire. As Chazal tell us, no man dies being satisfied of even half of his desire. You see, when a person's hungry, we eat. Some of us eat way more, not hungry. But when a person is hungry, there's a solution. Eat. If you're tired, sleep. Very good. The class is getting very bright. Then. Coming in for 20 years, you really learn something. But when it comes to wealth, once a person meets their goal, the goal that that person has fixed for himself or herself, the person feels more deficient. The lust for money grows even stronger than it had been before. Because it's not the money itself that the person wants. The person has enough to live. It's the idea of money that attracts the person. And that remains a forever unattainable idea. Chaim Shmulevitz, who I've been reading the last 30 seconds, says, never will his desire for money be satisfied. On a clear day, how far can you see? You know the earth is round? How far the earth is round? Can we get agreement here on that? Good. The earth is round? Everybody? Good. You disagree. Okay. Drive to the edge and fall off. Will you please? Leave us alone. Now, the world is round. So how far can you see?
To the horizon.
How far can a person, average height, 5 to 6 feet tall, see on a really clear day in a flat place? 5 miles. Because then the earth curves. You know, did you go to school? I forgot everything in high school. I remember this. The earth curves after the 5 miles. But there's a good trick. If you'd like to see more of what's in front of you, travel towards the horizon. Because you'll still be able to see 5 miles. But unless there's a really big, deep fog, you will always be 5 miles from the horizon, no matter how far you walk towards the horizon. Isn't that a good thought? I like that one. I thought of that myself. Found a book. I got that. You like that one? I like that one. That money is on the horizon. It's the pot at the end of the rainbow, not on your end, on the other end. And you can walk as far as you want. It keeps moving away.
If that was the goal line in football, these guys would never get to jump up and down and dance like whatever they do when they get a touchdown. I don't know, I haven't watched it for a long time. I remember they used to jump up and down. But the goal line kept moving further and further away, and that's the goal line, to have money, to have enough money. It's as elusive as walking to the horizon. You can never get there. Thank you, case closed. Genesis. Tape will be out Sunday. But there's another thing it does. It's so powerful that it can distort a person's vision. When, not in the everyday-to-day, nothing type of day, like a blah day, like today with the rain coming down, you want to go out to lunch, call up to order. Delivery man's dream a day like today. Instead of making $4, he made $8. Rosh Hashanah, shofar, teshuvah, all crying, shofar, put your head down, you close your eyes, you listen to the sound, that moaning sound, that sigh, ooh! The Mishnah in Masechet Rosh Hashanah. A shofar coated with silver or gold cannot be used for blowing the shofar. So you might think, as a simple person like I might think, I know why. It changes the sound. It doesn't sound like a shofar that has silver or gold, right? Wrong. That's not the reason. The sound might be identical. So why can't you coat it and make it beautiful? Don't we have Ze'eliv and Behu and all my mitzvot should be beautiful? Put your hand up. They'll all be jealous of you. It's not good. If someone takes notice of a precious metal coating the mouthpiece or the outer part of the shofar, they'll forget the objective of the mitzvah and lose sight of deen, judgment. The silver on the outside of a shofar will distort the message of its sound. In fact, they won't hear the sound at all. In Masechet Tamid, Daf Yomi, guys, might remember this, it wasn't so long ago. The Gemara tells us about Alexander, the Alexander the Great. I saw him on buses recently, there must have been some kind of TV program, some Alexander the Great, all the buses. I notice things, I'm a little nuts when I walk down the street. Looking at the buses, a lot better than looking at a lot of other things. Safer sometimes, but sometimes the picture on the bus is worse than that. He wanted to go to a country in Africa, which was beyond the mountains of darkness, the Gemara tells us. So he asked the wise men of Israel, how do I get beyond the mountains of darkness? And he followed their instructions, and he reached his desired destination. And what did he find? A country populated only by women. So he decided, I have to conquer them. But before he had a chance to do so, a delegation of women came out to see him. And they persuaded him not to attack. What did they tell him? Attempting to conquer us can't add to your glory. Why? If you are victorious,
People will say you were triumphant over the weak agenda. And if we defeat you and kill you, oy vavoy, what a reputation. So he's convinced he shouldn't attack. He said, you know, after my long travels, I'm hungry. They said, wait right here, Almighty General. We'll send you what you need. We'll send you what you want. And they sent him a huge brick of gold on a golden table. And he told them, do you eat gold? And they said, is it regular bread that you want? Are you so short of bread back in Macedonia where you come from that you came all the way here to buy a loaf of bread? We thought you came here for gold and silver because that's what you crave. And we thought if that's what satisfies you, that's what we would give you. He engraved the gates of the city with the following, the Gemara tells us. I, Alexander of Macedonia, was a fool until I came here to the land of women. It is they who taught me wisdom. You want to make the trip? Will you trust me and just learn the lesson? The mountains of darkness apart doesn't sound so good. Unless you like extreme vacations, which is very in the U.S. of advertising right now. Extreme everything. There's extreme toothpaste, extreme hairspray. In Sarei HaMe'ah, a great classic of many biographies and tales of great people who lived in Yerushalayim, there's a story about two brothers. One of them studied Torah on a regular basis, was a matnid, and he asked for the famous request of a ben Torah. Lechem le'echol u'beged l'lbosh. Bread to eat and clothes, not really clothing, a garment to wear. The twin chose to go into business. So he went into the import business. Lo aleinu, how many years I was in that business. And he had to travel. And he traveled to a distant country where he became very wealthy. On one of his many business trips, he decided to make a stopover by his tzaddik brother, his righteous brother. When the poor brother heard that his brother was coming, he tried to clean up, neaten up, and fancy up his humble abode with whatever he could. When the rich brother arrived by the poor brother's face shone with joy, with excitement about the visit. And since it was the night of Shabbat, they sat around the table with a clean tablecloth, candles burning. But the guest had a sad face. The Tamid Chacham brother said to the businessman, my dear brother, are you feeling okay? He said, I'm fine. He said, why do you look so sad? He said, I see the poverty in which you live.
I think of my beautiful home, my gold, my candlesticks, my furnishings, my decorator, my designer sheets. I can't help but feel saddened by your poverty, he said. He was interrupted immediately. My dear brother, I'm very happy to hear how well you are living. And may you continue to be blessed. But tell me, how did you acquire all of that luxury? He said, well, I've always worked very hard. I travel from country to country. I spend most of my time away from home. And there are times I don't have a minute to take a bite. But the weather doesn't affect whether I have to travel or not. But that's what it takes to be a success in business. So answered the supposedly poor brother, I see. So you prefer to travel and toil outside and let your money stay at home. I, on the other hand, he said, have chosen to live in my own home and I let my money go into Galut. My money is in exile. Mitzilat Yesharim. Kin'ah comes from foolishness and a lack of understanding. The only person who loses out is you. There are some people whose foolishness is so strong that whenever they see someone else they know have some good fortune, they feel pain, they feel suffering. They are so pained by what others have, they derive no pleasure from what they themselves possess. You know, if you're so worried about what you're missing, what somebody else has, you know what you're missing out on? The enjoyment of what you do have. Forget about it. Let me just put it in a nutshell. Unless you stop comparing yourself with others, your entire life will be full of needless pain and suffering. You go to school? Yeah? How many girls in your school? Approximately. 100, 200, 300? 800? 500. Do you know that out of 500 girls, only one can be the best singer and 499 cannot? Do you know that? It's a fact. Do you know out of 500 girls, whatever measure you want to measure, talent, looks, wealth, clothes, anything, only one can be the best and 499 can be only second or third or fourth or fifth or 498 or 499 or 500. In any group, there can only be one best. So one who decides, I'm going to be envious of the accomplishments or the talents or the virtues of another, will probably just suffer anyhow because he's only one. Pele Yoed says that when envy is strong, a person will feel hatred and animosity towards the one he envies. Sometimes that works, sometimes this works. Gotta get the flapping again. That person will wish the other harm. That person will gossip about the other. The feelings of envy are destructive. Not to the one who is being envied, but to the one who is envious. That person's life is nothing but a series of mental anguish. In his Kof Kinah, he says, that type of person knows they're wrong when somebody else trips, falls, or suffers, and you enjoy it. I wish it were more uncommon and nobody understood that. I have good news. When a person feels the pain of envy, the person is causing it to himself. And that's good news. Because since you cause yourself the pain, you have the ability to stop it. You are the Advil. All by yourself. Or a leave, or whatever you take, I know. Nothing works except one thing for everybody. That's the US of advertising. You convince the other one doesn't work. So the Torah tells us that we have a positive requirement and obligation to overcome envy. So I jot it down for myself. Somewhere here. Some positive suggestions. So we can go home with something. Like, take out your little purse, girls. We're going to write this down now. Take it home with us. Remedies for jealousy. Number one, we need to develop a sensitivity to the feelings of others. That's not like 101, that's deep. Moshe would not accept leadership because he felt he would hurt his brother Aaron's feelings. There could never be jealousy there. Rabbi Yisrael Salanter lived a very simple life. He had one luxury, a little silver snuff box. He would never take this box out of his pocket in the presence of a person who was poverty stricken. Because he was afraid they might be hurt because they did not possess the same trinket. You have to be sensitive to others. You can't flaunt or show off whatever beracha, whatever blessing Hashem has granted. You have to do that for fear it might hurt someone else. It might arouse jealousy. The mother of a large family spends the day and finally falls into a deep sleep. Nothing should wake that woman up after what she goes through from dawn until night. But a baby whining, not crying, not screaming, rah, 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 will get her up like that. You know why? Why? Yes. She's tuned in. That's her station. She's sensitive to her baby. It'd be good if when her husband slammed the door she heard that, but I don't think so. Two. We have to work on a midah called bitachon. Our trust in Hashem. Shevet Musar puts it nicely. Kishem she'enu tachat ha'evshah she'yitush
Yacharosh yachad im ashor. The same way a mosquito will never, ever, 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 ever pull the plow with an ox to plow the field. V'shezivuv yinloch al anashim, or that a fly will rule over humans. V'nimela shilachem im ariyeh, or an ant, not your mother's sister, the little thing that crawls at picnics. An ant, the other one's an aunt, isn't it? Yes, this is an ant. Yeah, but in Brooklyn they're both the same. There's an ant and an ant. You people out of town don't understand this silly humor, but you know. We know what we sound like, mother, brother. Kach, Iyashar, Shiyasig, Adam, Davar, She'ele, Bitsono, Yitbarach, Shiyasigeu. If Hashem doesn't want you to have it, you're never going to have it. It's the same. Certain things are meant to be, and certain things never will be. Hashem decides. So why, he says, Lama yitrach ha'adam, why should a person toil and work? Lahevel zimano, in vain. L'dof ma'shelo nigzal alav la'asig, to chase after what wasn't decreed in heaven to be theirs. Sheva, fantastic. The sources, you just copy down the names, you and Tapeline, just next time you listen to this CD, probably another 100 years, take out a pencil, and every sefer I mentioned tonight, write it down and buy it. Or those of you, next Monday when you get it, you can listen again, and just write down every sefer. This Shevet Musar says, he compares it to a baby who sees its own shadow on a wall. The baby thinks it can grab the shadow and keeps grabbing for it, but doesn't realize it can never catch it. As adults, we chase and chase our desires, many times to no avail. At some point, we have to wake up and say, Kevan shetarachti velo matzati, since I've toiled and not achieved, not acquired, gizerah min hashamayim hi, that's what heaven wants. Velamma ani motzi bahevel yamayim shnatay ba'anacha, why am I expending my days and years in vain and in sighing? Tov li lismoach b'chelki, better I should be happy with my portion. U'bazeh yivlu batov yamai shnotai b'ni meni'imim, and in that my days will be spent. Batov, good, meni'imim, pleasantly. What Hashem declares will be yours. No one can take it away. What Hashem declares will not be yours, no one and nothing on earth can acquire for you. I'm after self-call. That reminds me. Hatam Sofer. Gotta buy a lot of books to get that. On Pirkei Avot, he says, he doesn't say, Sameach Bechelko is happy with his lot. Some people, I know what lot is. A lot of these forces is about 18 million right now. But lot. If you're happy with that, you're really happy. He translates as happy with his portion. He gives the example of a wealthy father who left a huge inheritance in trust for his young son. The trustee gives the young man a portion of the money, and every time they feel a legitimate need, they resupply a little bit more. To give the child who inherited the fortune all the money, or even slightly more than what he needs, would be foolish. Because given the immaturity of the child and the limited knowledge of the young one, it would be squandered wastefully and possibly even dangerously on drugs or stuff like that. Even if the young man would ask for more money, the trustees exercise discretion responsibly and give only what they know will be beneficial to the child. Mashal. Nimshal. If we believe in the Hashgacha HaKadosh Baruch Hu, we trust that He knows what's best for us and how much we need. We may be deserving of great reward, but He gives it to us in quantities measured so we won't squander it foolishly. He gives us a portion of what's designated for us, of what we deserve, of what's rightfully ours according to His cheshbon, His calculation. But He holds on to the remainder and He will give it to us at the proper time. Only Hashem, whose wisdom is infinite, can know what's good for us. So why complain? There was a great, great man who lived a couple of hundred years ago, Rav Zusio. He lived in poverty. Someone looked at his tattered clothing, his torn shoes, and asked him, "How can you daily say, Sha'asa li kotsoki? Hashem, you made all that I need. When you're so destitute and lacking in basic amenities." Rav Zusio's answer is incredible. God knows my needs better than I do. If He has determined that one of my needs is poverty, I'm happy to accept His judgment. There was once a beggar who was given a magic wallet, a beggar's dream. In it was $1. But he was told by his benefactor, "My friend, this is a magic wallet. Every time you take out a dollar, it won't be empty. There will be another dollar in the wallet." 3 days later, the beggar was found dead on a huge pile of dollar bills. Unless a person is content with what they have, there's never enough. You want to overcome envy, jealousy, chemda, kin'ah? You have to treat everything in this physical world as a tool. A tool to be used to avodat Hashem. A person who desires ruchaniyut, the spiritual, sees everything in this world only as a utensil. Supply for my service to Hashem. And they're given to me based on what Hashem expects from me. If He expects me to give millions in tzedakah, maybe He's going to give me millions of dollars. But if He doesn't expect that from me, so I don't need that money. And if something was given to another, you should know those looks, that wife, that money, that car, that husband, that house,
that business, that private jet, whatever the other person has, was given to them for their particular, unique job in the service of Hashem. It wasn't meant for you. A carpenter is given a hammer and nails. A cab driver is given a taxi. An electrician is given wires and a cutter. A painter is given a ladder and a brush. Depends what you have to do. That's what he gives you. Anyone who truly, truly works on this and believes it automatically has nothing to desire. There's another thing called by Kava Yashar. It's another one you have to write down. Kava Yashar. We should trust that all that Hashem does is just and fair. Ein la adam l'tchok et ha-sha'a kila v'yiftach v'Hashem she'ein mikaper tzchar kobriya. Hashem never holds back a reward due someone. V'in lo zachar yod b'harvacha b'olam hazeh b'vaday tzcharo kafun chabar yayar olam b'hiya olam haba. If a person doesn't get it here, you're going to get it there. It's fair. You think you deserve it? Just because you don't have it now doesn't mean you're never getting it. Rak yasim elibo ki akol dadocha zaniyut hu kapara sechal chatav shav. And if you're suffering here, good. It's erasing all my transgressions. It's preparing me for the next world. He continues, those are beautiful. Harbe rishayim soakim b'geinam. So many rishayim are screaming in Geinam. What are they screaming? Halevai hayinu aniyim v'dalim olam hazeh. I wish I was poor in the other world. Halevai hayinu sovlim yisurim olam hazeh l'chapara. I wish, they say, I would have suffered more in olam hazeh, so I don't have to suffer in olam haba. And all the good that we had, rova tova, shirut hamamon shayalanu, all that we had in wealth in this world, what did the Shaim in Geinam scream? Hu inyan ra. It's bad. Because now we're in the trap of Geinam. A very important factor in combating jealousy. We should remember that if we chase what we don't deserve, we lose what we have. Gemara Sota. Tanu Rabbanan Sota Natana Eina B'Misha Eina Ro'ila. She put her eye on a man that doesn't belong to us, not worthy of. She's not worthy of. It's not hers. Mashi biksha lo nitan la. The man she wanted, she doesn't get. Umashi biyada. And the one she had, natlu mimena. They took away from her. I can go on all night, but I can't. There are time limits here. We must realize... Question. I have to wake you up again. Who created jealousy? Hand, please. Yes, okay. Hashem. Like everything else. So he created it. There must be a good use for it. Ever think of that? It's a good use for it. Even a trait, which is for the most part negative, was created for positive purpose. Pele Yoetz. Aval yesh kinah tova. There is a good jealousy. And everybody knows it. Kin'at
Sofrim Tarbe Chochma. The jealousy of Torah wisdom increases wisdom in the world. He's such a good learner, she's so smart, I wish I had more, I'm going to try harder. What a great jealousy. A person yitaver yishtadeh la'alot ba'alot ha'chokhmah va'avodat Hashem et barach. Great suggestion. And if someone sees she'chavero matzliach v'ma'asav, his friend is succeeding in his deeds, zot yekinato, that should be your jealousy. Tells us all about those positive types of kinah. But I want to give you a chiddush. My yeshiva's word for a novel idea. You see, it's very common for people to say, kinat sofrim tadei chokhma. I see a person is growing religiously in observance more than me, and I get jealous. I wish. It's good. It's healthy. But like Yosef Chaim Sonnenfeld, Zechet Tzadik Levracha, made an amazing statement. There's a great book about him called Ha'ish Al HaChoma. Might even come in English, I don't know. Probably. It's probably 9 volumes of art scrolls. A short book. I never suffered from envy. Wow. I don't know who could say that. I'll read it again. Quote, I'm not saying this because I can't say this. I have never suffered from envy. Not only was I not envious of material attainments of others such as wealth and honor, but not even of spiritual attainments. He didn't even have kinat sofrim. When the sages said that envy of scholars increases wisdom, they did not mean to encourage people to feel this envy. Imagine. It says, Kenata. We always translate it, yeah, you should try and be more like when you see your friend getting, you know, studying her Navi and she knows everything and she's answering all the questions. You should try and study Navi better. If you see that your friend is really, he's saying a 7-minute Amidah, you should want to say an 8-minute Amidah. You know, and you see somebody really knows the Halakha, you should study the Halakha till you got it for heart, right? That's what it means. Not according to Rav Yosef Chaim, Zechet Tzadik Levracha. When the sages said that envy of scholars increases wisdom, they did not mean to encourage people to feel this envy. Rather, they were referring to someone who already feels the emotion of envy. They were advising such a person to channel his or her envy into the spiritual domain. The sages were expressing the principle that a person should channel his negative traits into positive areas. But, tonight's conclusion, folks, thanks for bearing with me. We finally got there. But, it's preferable to keep a distance from anything that has a connection with this negative trait, since it can cause more serious harm. If a person wants to grow spiritually, it is sufficient for him to delve into the words of Chazal, which will be able to give him the motivation and inspiration to improve himself. The best envy is no envy at all. I thank you for coming. See you next week.